currently has an approved construction of a 5.6 million liter fuel tank at the site. It would be our preference that that stay where it is, because the plan is to construct that in the very near future. So we should leave this process to run its course and not try to broach the two. If the board so in the future wants to then take that and amalgamate it, that's within the board's purview, and we would support it totally. But the reason for that being put there was the intent of it being built early, and so we should leave it where it is, in our opinion.
Thank you. Connie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My next question is with respect to, again, the scope of the license and whether the proposal for transferring water from the attenuation pond, reclaim pond, to the pits eventually, if that is being considered as part of this license. I know it's part of the application. And if so, if there is specific criteria required for that discharge at this time, or if it would be approved as part of any sort of future plan that is anticipated by the proponent.
Thank you. Applicant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Larry Connell. In our application, we tried to lay before the board the entire life of mine operational plan so that you saw the entire picture, not piecemealing it and giving it to you over time. So yes, that ultimate transfer of water from the attenuation and reclaim ponds into the open pit was included as this application, so that you had the entire picture in front of you. And it would be our intent that whether the board puts that as a clause or whatever goes in the license, but it's part of our application. With respect to standards, it goes back to what we said just earlier, that we would anticipate that before the dikes were ever breached to allow the intermixing of the lake waters back into those pits, that there would be an approvals system in place that all parties have discussed and are comfortable that we have met what's protective of the aquatic environment, be that CCME, a combination of the background, or a combination of risk-based assessment, that there would be consensus that those waters are ready to be mixed. And so we would see it handled in that format.
Thank you. Connie, do you have one more question? Go ahead.
Just a couple more questions, Mr. Chair. My next question has to do with some of the waste rock being placed underwater for the construction of the dikes and the fisheries compensation finger dikes and that. You've talked about a certain, I guess that's the PAG rock being placed underwater. And I'm just wondering if that rock needs to be placed below a certain water elevation, either say if there's a meter below the anticipated low water level, or if there's sort of any thought behind that part of the use of the PAG waste rock.
Thank you. Applicant.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Larry Connell. I'm going to answer the first part and then defer to Dan for the second part. Yes, in our planning for using this PAG rock for building of fisheries and parts of the dikes, it was very carefully looked at where we could use this rock so that it would be isolated from air. The critical thing is it can never see air, because the air would then allow it to oxidize and create this cycle of creating bad water. And so there was criteria established for how and where this rock could be used. And I'm going to defer to Dan to actually quote you that the criteria that we put forward.
It's Dan Walker. We design the fish habitat such that it is constructed to be 3 meters below water surface to allow for 2 meters for ice accumulation and an additional meter for fish usage during that ice accumulation.
Thank you. Carly?
Did Did those depths also, that was for the fisheries, did that apply to the dikes as well? The dewatering dikes? Just to add, just to add to that, Mr. Chair, the drawings just show it kind of equal level.
Thank you. Applicant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's Larry Connell. So there was just a little confusion over the question. The drawing that you saw today obviously doesn't allow the scale to show that, but the application quotes a 1 meter on the dike so that the PAG rock would stop 1 meter below, 3 feet down from the surface of the water to ensure that it never was exposed to air. But on the scale on these drawings, it just doesn't show up on that basis.
Thank you. Connor, you have more questions?
Yes, I have a couple more questions, Mr. Chair. My next question is a clarification with respect to the discharges from the sumps at the fuel containment and land farm. If you could just clarify when those discharges would be monitored, sort of before discharge, if there was any type of sort of, again, frequency for that monitoring.
Thank you. Applicant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Larry Connell. These fuel containment, or these areas of liners where fuels or land farm are contained, obviously they don't require anything during the winter months when they're totally frozen. The issue is coming from the spring thaw and the freshet. Our intent would be to then put in place the oil water separator, cycle it until we were comfortable and knew from analytical data that we were achieving the standard for discharge. And once we did that, then we would discharge that water. And so it would only be when we actually have accumulations of water in those sumps. So it can't be something that we can say it will take place every day because we may not be discharging every day. During the periods of discharge, again, I would defer back to the water quality flow monitoring program for frequency, but we'd be in the order of say once per week after we had established that we had met those standards. These are short duration discharges. Once the spring freshet and runoff is gone, that system is shut down until the accumulation of water from a rainfall.
Thank you. Connor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my last question. I was just wondering if you could clarify with respect to the NERVS project certificate, what the status of any on-site lab accreditation might be at this time.
Thank you. Applicant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Larry Connell. We have all of our environmental sampling, the sampling that's required to prove compliance, is currently, and for the first while, will be done through an off-site lab because our lab will still be under construction. So we'll be using accredited off-site labs until we're comfortable with our own facilities. We are starting to construct our facility this year. The accreditation, we've registered with the accreditation group. These accreditations are not done on a lab. You don't accredit a lab. What you do is you credit a lab for an element. So we get accredited for copper, for example. And so it then takes a period of time where we send our samples out to a number of labs. We compare those to our labs. And after doing this cycle of round-robin testing, we can gain accreditation for that element. And you do this for each of the elements your lab is doing. So there's no one accreditation for a lab. You get it accredited by sample, and as you can see, it takes time for that. So we will use an outside lab until we become accredited, and we're not even sure at that point in time what we will do, but our intent is to then work towards accreditation of our lab on the specific elements that we need to be able to measure on site.
Thank you. Any more questions from staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple questions. Just to one, just a clarification that I've got a quick question and another for our legal. Just a quick question to Larry regarding the mill tailings treatment and the I think I read there's going to be some sludge produced from treatment from the